Welcome to the Investing Insights podcast from Morningstar.com. In this week's podcast, as market volatility dominates the news, we discuss the persistence of turbulence and get some ideas from Christine Benz on what investors should do. It was tax and IRA week on Morningstar.com, and we have a series of reports on fund picks and tips from Russ Kennel, Christine Benz, Jeff Stafford, and Karen Anderson. Let's get started. First, we explain what investors should do amid market turbulence.
Hi, I'm Susan Jabinski for Morningstar.com. Volatility has returned to the market this year. Here to talk with us about whether we can expect that volatility to persist and to share some ideas of what we might do with our portfolios in these volatile times is Christine Benz. Christine is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today via Skype.
No problem, Susan. Great to be here.
Now, can we talk briefly a little bit about some of the sources of volatility that are gripping the market today?
Well, yes, a few key things. One is the coronavirus worries, the sense that this could be something that might be more widespread than was originally thought, and concerns that it's going to affect more economies than just China's. And even if the effect were just a China effect, China's fortunes are very much tied to the rest of the world. So that is a near-term worry. Longer term, there are concerns about the volatility related to the election. There's a fair amount of uncertainty going into this one over who the eventual candidate will be on the Democratic side, the balance of power in Congress, and so forth. So that's another potential challenge for the market. And finally, I would say the big overhang, Susan, is just that equities have enjoyed such a long-running rally. They're still not inexpensive, despite the near-term sell-off. So during periods of not cheap equity valuations, equities tend to be more sensitive to external events like coronavirus, and they can't just shake them off. So I would expect the volatility to not necessarily be persistent, but will be something that could be with us for a while.
So don't be surprised by it if we see, you know, several, you know, days, maybe months of a little down market performance necessarily, right?
That's right. And I think Investors have to remind themselves we've come through an extraordinarily tranquil period. Stocks have performed so well for so long, and bonds haven't been bad either. So it was bound to happen, and no one might have guessed what the specific catalyst would have been, but nonetheless, something that we were probably bracing ourselves for.
So now we've talked about volatility, of course, in the past many times before, and that you say that how one responds to volatility should depend on sort of your life stage in investing and where you are and your risk capacity. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think that investors should let that be the main driver of how concerned they are during periods of market volatility, your proximity to needing to spend your money. So retirees are top of mind for me. I was just speaking to a number of retirees, and retirees are actively spending from their portfolios, most of them. So they're reasonably concerned about near-term market volatility. I think it makes all the sense in the world for them to make sure that they have enough in safe assets like cash, like bonds, to tide them through periods of equity market volatility. On the other hand, younger investors who have many years until retirement probably shouldn't be as worried because they will not be spending from their portfolios anytime soon. But some of them do have near-term spending goals themselves. So they might have home down payments or college tuition or whatever it might be for that part of the portfolio that they expect to spend within the next couple of years or even in the next 10 years, I would de-risk that portion of the portfolio.
And I mean, the challenge, right, is that, you know, bond yields have come down, cash isn't yielding anything too spectacular by any stretch.
Right.
So what should investors be doing if they want to keep their near-term expenditures a little bit more secure and out of harm's way?
Well, I think investors shouldn't get too hung up on the fact that yields are as low as they are, in part because yield or income isn't really why the main reason that you're owning bonds in this case. You're owning for them for their diversifying potential, their ability to hold their ground, maintain stability in periods when your equity holdings take a dive. So I think it does call for a readjustment of expectations, certainly with bond yields as low as they are. That doesn't portend great returns for bond investors or cash investors over the next decade. But if you're thinking of those holdings as kind of the shock absorbers of your portfolio, the money that will stay safe even as your equities are undergoing volatility, I think bonds serve that role really well. The key is just to not overdo it. So you're not upending your total plan. You are just parking enough in cash and bonds to help you meet your cash flow needs over, say, the next 5 to 10 years.
Now, let's talk a little bit about retirees specifically. You know, they're often using dividend-paying stocks to help pay, you know, some of those expenses in retirement. What advice do you have for them today, for those dividend stock investors who are retired?
Right. And many retirees do love their dividend paying stocks. I would say a couple of things. One is just think about how comfy you are with the volatility that can accompany stocks in general, because even though dividend paying stocks have had a history of holding up better than the broad market in periods of turbulence, nonetheless, they'll feel it when the market is falling. So just do a little checkup. Think back to the financial crisis, for example. If that was your strategy then and you sailed through it and you were comfortable with that volatility, well, that's a good thing. On the other hand, if you haven't used this strategy in your drawdown period before, you, I think, would want to augment your dividend paying stock holdings with some safer securities. You also want to check up on the stability of those dividends, because one thing we saw in the financial crisis is that financial stocks in particular, which had historically been a big source of dividends in the market, financial companies, banks in particular, cut their dividends. So just check up on the stability of your dividends as well.
And what about those investors who are still saving for retirement, those who are a little younger and have some time? You know, they could very well be spooked during these periods of volatility, too. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say volatility like this is your friend, that generally speaking, if you have the wherewithal to get money invested during periods of market volatility, that's a great time to do so. I love really automating the whole process if you're a young investor. So using a dollar cost averaging program where you're not really overthinking these market ups and downs. And then I also like making sure that you're in some sort of an age-appropriate investment mix. For young accumulators, I can't think of a much better way to go than using some sort of a target date vehicle that is, generally speaking, for younger investors, pretty equity heavy, but you've kind of taken the guesswork out of the asset allocation question for yourself. I think that's also a great strategy.
Christine, thank you so much for this perspective. We especially need it during turbulent market times. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Susan.
I'm Susan Chubinsky for Morningstar. Thanks for tuning in.
6 days a week, we deliver the latest news for investors. Just say, Alexa, enable the Morningstar skill, or visit morningstar.com/Alexa.
Now, Russ Kinnell offers a range of mutual fund ideas for IRAs.
Hi, I'm Christine Benz for Morningstar. It's IRA season, and some investors might be looking for just the right holding to use for their portfolios. Joining me to provide some mutual fund ideas is Russ Kinnell. He's Morningstar's Director of Manager Research. Russ, thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Russ, let's talk about some funds that you like for investors who want to populate their IRAs with something. Your first pick is pretty tried and true. This is Dodge & Cox Balanced. What's the idea and what's the virtue maybe of using just a single-stop fund like this to populate your IRA?
Yeah, I think it makes it simple for you. It's a nice core strategy. I think it's really the old-fashioned 60-40 split. They sometimes vary a little, but you think about all the strategies over the years that have come at 60-40, from risk parity to all these alternatives to all these tactical allocation, and at the end of the day, none of them have as good results as plain old 60-40. Dodge & Cox is great at it because they're very good at stocks and bonds. They have a value tilt on the equities. Their fixed income has a corporate slash mortgage focus with some treasuries too. So investment grade, but a bit of corporates. And the combination is just a great one. You look at the results over the long haul, have been very good. It's a firm where the investors are very long-term focused. They tend to stay at the firm through their whole careers, and it's a team approach. So just a lot of stability and just a nice dependable fund. You can put it in your IRA and just contribute every year.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. And one thing we know from looking at the data on IRA contributions is sometimes people get their money into the account, but it sits there in cash. Having this well-diversified fund is maybe a way to just make sure that your money gets invested. I can see investors thinking, like maybe right now, thinking it might not be a great time to buy equities. It seems like a fund like this kind of solves for that.
Yeah, it helps you with decision fatigue. Just keep putting money into it. It's not going to have many huge years. It's not going to have many terrible years. I mean, a year like 08 is going to be tough for a fund like this,
right.
But still it'll have a lot less downside than a pure equity fund. And so just keep plugging away.
Okay. Another fund that you like is a high-yielding, dividend-focused fund, Vanguard High Dividend Yield Index. This one is available as an ETF too, correct?
That's right.
So let's talk about the thesis here. I'm guessing low cost is toward the top of the list. What else is good about this fund?
That's right. 8 basis points is a nice way to start off.
Right.
It's tilted to the higher dividend yielding side of dividend paying stocks. So you get a fairly high dividend yield, which can often be a nice ballast in downtime because it'll, that income will keep coming in even a down market. And I think also in an IRA, you don't have to worry about the tax aspect,
right?
Because high dividend yield obviously is going to be tax inefficient somewhat because you have to pay taxes on that income. But obviously in an IRA, you don't have to worry about that. So this is just a nice, simple way to have some income I wanted to think of something a little different than a total market fund. This is a nice value dividend tilted fund.
Okay, but total market would be just fine with
total market is okay. Often a good idea too.
Okay, so Loomis Sayles Bond, it seems like this is another one that nicely harnesses that IRA wrapper where you have that tax efficiency working for you. Let's talk about this one.
Right, now this one is less of a core fund than the first two I mentioned.
Okay.
Because it's a multi-sector bond fund, so it's got high yield, it's got some foreign markets, it's got some foreign currency. So definitely for a bond fund, it's a very high risk fund.
Right.
But Dan Fuss and the rest of the team at Loomis are very good at taking those risks. I think it's helpful to think of this a little more like a stock fund in terms of your holding period. So it's also good for an IRA in that way because it does have some risks. So you really need to think about owning this fund at least 5 years, ideally more than 10. But again, it's got a nice income as well, but I think good return potential and a little different than your equity. So it's got some nice diversification potential as well.
Okay. Another fund that you like is T. Rowe Price Global Growth. This is also kind of a higher risk fund. It leans toward the growth side of the style box. Let's talk about why you and the team like this one.
Yeah, it's not often you can say here's a T. Rowe stock fund that's somewhat under the radar, but this is a fund with a great 11-year record that's under $1 billion. Mm. Scott Berg runs it. In some ways, the typical T. Rowe trademark, kind of growth at a reasonable price, more than 100 holdings, no particular stock above 3%, but 25% emerging markets weighting. So I actually consider this a fairly high-risk world stock fund. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's a nice world stock is a nice thing for the IRA because it is, again, a very diversified core holding. Again, this is one where you could make it your only holding or one of a few holdings. And again, at less than $1 billion AUM, it's got some room to run as well.
Okay, Russ, always great to get your insights. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks for watching. I'm Christine Benz from Morningstar.com.
Watch all the Morningstar content you love from your living room. Download the Morningstar Roku channel and get up-to-date independent insights on today's markets. Be comfortable. be informed.
Next, Christine Benz has some tips for those trying to squeeze in an IRA contribution for the 2019 tax year.
Hi, I'm Susan Jabinski from Morningstar. IRA season is upon us. Investors have until April 15th to make a contribution if they want it to count for the 2019 tax year. Joining me to share some tips if you are among those trying to squeeze in a last-minute contribution is Christine Benz. Christine is Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. Christine, thanks for joining me today.
Susan, it's great to be here.
So investment firms report every year that they see this spike in folks making contributions to an IRA right before that filing deadline. And so your first tip is stop procrastinating.
That's right. And this is one area where I say, don't do as I do as I say, because I'm among those procrastinators sometimes where I'm rushing in my IRA contributions for myself and my husband. But be careful about this, because especially if you have a very long time horizon until retirement, even those missed months can stack up over a period of time. I mean, think of great, really great market years like we've had recently, like last year, where if you miss just a couple of months, that's a big deal over time. So there's the prospect of foregone investment returns. It's also just much simpler to come up with the cash on a monthly basis versus one heavy lift right before April 15th. So my advice is to automate this if you possibly can. Put yourself on a dollar cost averaging plan. We have nice even IRA contribution limits currently where it's $6,000 for people under age 50. That means $500 a month will get you to that maximum contribution amount for 2020. Go that route and spare yourself the last minute scramble.
Now, another tip that you have is to do your homework when you're choosing between whether you should be investing in a traditional or a Roth IRA. What should we be thinking about?
Well, I think a lot of people reflexively choose the Roth, and there's certainly a lot to like about Roth in terms of tax-free withdrawals in retirement, no required minimum distributions, a couple of big attractions. But either work with a tax or financial advisor or do your own homework on your tax rate at the time of contribution versus what it will likely be or possibly be in retirement. For people who are getting close to retirement, who haven't yet saved a lot for retirement, they may be surprised to learn that actually traditional IRA contributions, when that tax break is more valuable to them because they're still working and have an income, will be more valuable to them than taking it in retirement when their tax bracket is lower. Mm-hmm. So the traditional IRA contributions for someone in that situation, which isn't an uncommon profile given how undersaved many of us are for retirement, that'll be better than making Roth contributions.
Hmm. Now, let's pivot to income limits. Another tip is to assume that you aren't necessarily shut out of an option because of an income limit. Is that right?
That's right. So there are income limits that relate to whether you can deduct a traditional IRA contribution on your tax return or whether you can make a Roth IRA contribution. Roth IRA contribution limits are higher than are the limits for deductible traditional IRA contributions. But a lot of people might see the higher Roth income limits and stop right there and say, oh, my income is well over that level, guess I can't do it. Well, the answer to that is what's called the backdoor Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. And the basic idea is that you fund a traditional IRA. You can't deduct it on your tax return because you automatically earn too much if you earn too much to contribute to a Roth IRA. But you're funding that traditional IRA. Then after a period has elapsed, and tax experts differ about how much time to let go, but you could do this fairly quickly after initially funding the account. You convert those dollars to Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. So it's a way for people who have not been able to fund a Roth IRA to get some assets over into the Roth column. Do check with a tax advisor on this, though, because there's this thing called the pro rata rule, and I won't get too into the weeds in terms of explaining what it is, but for people who have a lot of traditional IRA assets or 401k assets, essentially money that's never been taxed, that's sitting in tax-deferred accounts, the fact that you have those assets can affect the taxation of even the small amount that you are trying to convert to a Roth. So a good spot to get some tax advice.
Okay. And another tip is that An investor shouldn't assume that he or she is being shut out of a vehicle because they have no earned income.
Right. So an important criterion when you are contributing to an IRA is that you do have to have earned income. But if you are married and your partner has earned income, even if you yourself don't have earned income, he or she can make that contribution in your name in the form of a spousal IRA. So take advantage of that. It's an especially important point for parents where you've got one non-earning spouse who's really doing the heavy lifting on the home mm-hmm. front and another spouse who's earning an income. Make sure that you're putting money to work on behalf of the non-earning spouse. You'll really be grateful that you did when retirement rolls around.
Another tip is that investment firms have noticed that people will open up IRAs, but then they don't actually invest the money in anything, or
right.
it takes a while for them to do that. So what should people be thinking about getting that money invested in sooner?
Well, I would say just as you're trying to automate those contributions, I would say also get the investments automated as well. So to me, a really simple solution is just to use a target date fund to help make sure that your money is invested in an age-appropriate mix. So select one that roughly corresponds with your retirement date. That would be a quick and dirty solution. Another idea, if you have a little bit more time, is to take a look at all of your retirement assets in aggregate and see where you've got some holes. So for many people looking at their portfolios today, if they haven't been doing much repositioning, chances are they're light on the safe stuff because we've mm-hmm. seen very aggressive investments perform well. You may want to add to bonds. You may want to add to cash if retirement is close at hand. You may want to add to foreign stocks because we have seen foreign stocks generally underperform U.S. even though they did great in 2019. Smaller cap and value stocks might be other sort of holes that you might find in your portfolio, areas that you might want to top up with your new IRA contributions.
Christine, thank you so much for these tips for procrastinators like us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan.
I'm Susan Chubinsky for Morningstar. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, Jeff Stafford shares three stock picks for an IRA.
Hi, I'm Christine Benz for Morningstar. It's IRA season and many investors are on the hunt for worthy holdings for their portfolios. Joining me to share some individual stock ideas for investors is Jeff Stafford. He's Morningstar's Director of Equity Research in North America. Jeff, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Christine.
Jeff, when we think about good holdings for IRAs, sometimes we think about holdings that might kick off a lot of current income, and so you want to tax shelter that income, assuming that you're reinvesting those dividends. So a couple of the ideas that you brought do have fairly decent yields attached to them. Let's start with the first one, that's Schlumberger, and it looks like one of the things that you and the team think makes it attractive is that you think it's inexpensive
right.
currently. So let's talk about its undervaluation.
Yeah, sure. So Schlumberger is a company, oil field services company, that really helps oil and gas exploration and production companies take hydrocarbons out of the ground. They provide the products and services that help those companies. So the capital expenditures of the oil and gas companies, those are really the revenues in many cases for Schlumberger. And that's where our thesis for the company comes into play. So we think that the market is really underestimating international oil and gas capital expenditure growth over the next 5 years or so.
And what would be the catalyst for that, do you think?
So that's mainly just, the oil demand that we expect to be out there is going to need to be replaced by sources of supply. And a lot of that is expected to come from U.S. shale, which is the marginal producer. But there's also these more kind of call them traditional sources of oil and gas outside of the U.S. That are going to need more investment to help close that gap with demand, even after we see growth in U.S. shale.
Okay. So the yield is pretty attractive on Schlumberger, and you think that it's a solid dividend. It's likely to stay reasonably high.
Yeah, we feel pretty good about the security of the dividend based on the cash flows that we're forecasting for the company.
Okay. So the ticker for Schlumberger is SLB. Another one you like is Kellogg. Ticker is K. This one, too, is trading at a decent discount to the analyst's estimate of fair value. Let's talk about why you think it'll kind of climb out of the slump that it's been in.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a two-pronged story around revenue growth and on the margin side too, and operating margin. So we're beginning to see some signs that revenue growth is tracking in a way that we would expect based on some of the strategic initiatives that the company has put in place. So things like minimizing the product line to divest some non-core parts of the business. They're changing the way that they do their distribution. And that's had a positive impact on growth. And I think the market is appreciating that somewhat, but is still kind of hung up on the margin story for Kellogg. And we see the margin pressure that's on the company right now related to some long-term investments that we expect will pay off in the future. Investments in things like the brand, which should help Kellogg maintain its wide moat and keep competition at bay.
Okay. And you think some acquisitions that they've made have kind of gotten them on the right side of the trend toward healthy eating? It seems like everybody's low carb and anti-cereal right now.
Yeah. So, you know, investors might not realize that Kellogg owns a lot of other brands outside of Kellogg cereal, and some of the movement that they've made in their portfolio has helped them kind of stay more on trend with some of the things that we're seeing in snacking.
Okay. So this one has a decent yield attached to it, not quite as high as Schlumberger. Do you feel like that's a solid yield as well?
Yeah, we do. I mean, when you look at the other options out there for kind of yield and income-focused investors, we think that the Kellogg dividend is something that should be attractive for those types of investors.
Okay. So another one that doesn't have such an attractive yield, but nonetheless looks attractive in terms of being undervalued is Expedia. This is kind of a household name if you're doing some travel search. So this company has not performed especially well, but you and the analyst team think that it's pretty inexpensive today. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I think one of the main concerns in the market right now with Expedia is competition that people are thinking could come from the likes of like Google and even Amazon. But we would point to Expedia's narrow moat, and that is based on a network effect that we think is very strong. So it creates a virtuous circle. So you have properties added to Expedia, and that attracts more users to the platform, and more users to the platform attracts more properties, and so on and so forth. So we think that network effect that Expedia has built over years will prove to be a formidable thing for them to help them, you know, keep competition at bay.
Okay. So if I had to plot these three stocks on sort of a risk spectrum, would you think of this as being the most risky of the three that we've talked about?
Yeah, it's got a higher uncertainty rating. So, you know, that's something that we look at too. I'd say Schlumberger would be up there in terms of risk and uncertainty as well. And maybe a little bit lower on the uncertainty side would be Kellogg.
Okay, Jeff. Always great to get your insights. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Christine.
Thanks for watching. I'm Christine Benz for Morningstar.
Expand your investing horizons and look to the long term with Morningstar's new podcast, The Long View. Join hosts Christine Benz and Jeff Patek as they talk to influential leaders in investing, advice, and personal finance. Search for and subscribe to The Long View today. And lastly, Karen Anderson discusses bond fund choices for your IRA.
Hi, I'm Christine Benz for Morningstar. It's IRA season, and many investors may be on the hunt for some type of a bond holding. Joining me to share some bond funds that would be appropriate for an IRA is Karen Anderson. She's Director of Fixed Income Manager Research for Morningstar. Karen, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Christine. Great to be here. Thanks.
Good to have you. So I think a lot of investors, if they're looking at their asset allocations today, we've had this great long-running rally in the equity market. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're all getting older and closer to retirement. So many investors, if they're looking at their asset allocations, might say, I really need to top up my bond exposure. Mm-hmm. So you brought some funds that you think would be good, sort of core to sort of core plus, and we'll explain the difference, holdings for bond portfolios. So let's start with a couple of funds, a pair of funds that you and the team really like. These are both gold-rated Baird Aggregate Bond and Baird Short-Term Bond. Let's talk about why you think they're sort of good, very high quality holdings.
That's right. These are a couple of strategies that we really like in the intermediate space. They have always been investment grade focused, and the team really sticks to what it does best. It's a cash bond shop. There's nothing fancy here, no derivatives. It's really all about security selection, mostly in corporates, and they're not trying to make interest rate bets. So the strategies are going to be very closely linked to the aggregate or the short-term index that the short strategy uses. So it's kind of what you see is what you get, mm-hmm. and that's what's really nice about this. And the team at Baird does a really good job of its credit work and that part of the credit spectrum. And I think that it's just a nice diversifier. Both would be a nice diversifier to a very equity-heavy portfolio.
Okay.
And give you that protection that you need
right,
when,
that ballast.
Yes.
Right.
Correct.
So the Baird aggregate bond is in our core, intermediate term core category.
Correct.
So generally speaking, these have really high credit qualities. But you say that you and the team actually like this fund, or at least performance has been better than you might get with a total bond market index.
Right. These are active managers that we're putting to a test here. We're expecting them to beat some of the very low cost passive ETFs that are tracking the ag or other short indices, and they have a track record of doing that, and that is why they get our highest rating.
So for investors who are willing to step out on the risk spectrum a little bit in search mm-hmm. of some extra income, you think that the core plus category, core plus intermediate term bond category might be a mm-hmm. place to look. So let's talk about that category, and then let's talk about a fund that you like in that space, and there are several, of course, but BlackRock mm-hmm. Total Return is one that you and the mm-hmm. team like and rate as gold currently. But first, right. let's just talk about what core plus
sure. So Core Plus, these are strategies that have at least 5% in high yield. So that already makes them a bit more aggressive than the aggregate index. And some of these strategies are going to be pretty close to that 5% high yield mark forever. Others are going to be quite a bit more aggressive,
okay.
Up to a third of assets in high yield. So there are some different performance profiles here for sure. But they are going to, maybe have a little bit tougher time in stress moments for credit. They aren't going to give you that ballast that those core funds I mentioned would give you, because they simply aren't in any high yield.
Right.
You're probably going to get some return from core plus funds, but over time you should also expect a higher return.
Okay.
So BlackRock Total Return is one of our favorites in this space. This team does a lot of things well across corporates, securitized, U.S., non-U.S. They're very attuned to risk management, and we appreciate all the things that they do there. And I think it's overall a really nice package in terms of getting exposure to lots of different parts of the bond market.
Okay. Another fund that you and the team like that is also Core Plus is PIMCO Active Bond ETF. So this is an active exchange traded fund. We don't talk about these very often. Let's talk about the pivot that went on with the fund's underlying strategy. And also I'd like to talk about why you and the team think that this is kind of a nice backdoor way for investors to gain access to PIMCO
right.
without necessarily paying a sales charge, or maybe if they're do-it-yourself type investors.
Right. So this is an interesting strategy in that it used to be styled after PIMCO's flagship fund, the Total Return Fund. And in May 2017, it had a makeover and with a new management team, which we think highly of. And the strategy was changed to allow for more high-yield exposure, so they can take up to 30% of the portfolio in high-yield debt. In tandem, they reduced the allowance for non-U.S. Currency exposure, which does not help for that good income generation goal that they're going for. And they also allowed for a little bit more duration risk, a little bit more allowance there for the managers. And with that flexibility, good risk management is required, but these are things that we think PIMCO can do well.
Okay, so like BlackRock Total Return, this one is going to be appropriate for investors who are willing to step out on the risk spectrum a little bit. It sounds like its potential to have significant high yield exposure and some other features might give it a little more volatility on a day-to-day basis, but the income stream should help.
That's right, and the fees are quite good in the overall core plus space. So that's another reason to give it a look.
A big plus with any fund, especially bond funds, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Karen, great to get your insights. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Christine.
Thanks for watching. I'm Christine Benz for Morningstar.com.
That does it for this week's Investing Insights podcast from Morningstar.com. We hope you have enjoyed our program and we welcome your feedback. Please send your comments and questions to podcast@morningstar.com. From everyone here at Morningstar, thanks for listening.